College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Later in the show, we are going to be joined by newly minted TCU head coach Jamie Dixon, also sprinkling other news and notes from around the world of college basketball. Want to remind you to subscribe to us on iTunes and also check us out on Facebook on the College Hoops Today Facebook page, and also send me your questions on Twitter. I will get to them later in the podcast. That's at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Have you checked our Casper.com yet? Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by offering an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting support of comfort. Casper's mattress is one of a kind. It has just the right sink and just the right bounce. Two technologies, a hybrid of latex foam and memory foam. Check this out. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Plus, Casper offers free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Because statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether or not it's the right bed for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality, you spend a third of your life on. Listen to these prices. $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing that to industry averages, that's an outstanding price point. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com and using my code HOOPS in all capitals, H-O-O-P-S. That's www.casper.com, and be sure to enter the College Hoops Today podcast promo code HOOPS. Terms and conditions apply. So now that we've got you set on where to get your mattress, one thing that is really common in sports and in life is that you never want to be the guy that follows the guy. You never want to immediately follow somebody who has had unbelievable success in the job that you are about to take. But that is what Jamie Dixon walked into when he became the head coach at the University of Pittsburgh in 2003 when Ben Howland took the UCLA job. Ben Howland resurrected Pittsburgh basketball. He was there from 1999 to 2003. The Panthers won a Big East tournament championship in 2003. They lost in the Sweet 16 to Marquette with Dwayne Wade on that team that went to a Final Four. And then Ben Howland got his dream job and went to UCLA. But Jamie Dixon, who had never been a head coach before, was fortunate to get the opportunity to take over a ready-made team in the Big East. And what did he do with that opportunity? He set an extremely high bar over the next 13 years. 11 times during that 13-year period, Pittsburgh would play in the NCAA tournament. They went to the Sweet 16 in 2004, in 2007, in 2009 when they lost in the Elite Eight to Villanova. So they had three trips to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. And with all that said, Pittsburgh during the 13 years that Jamie Dixon was head coach won an average of 25.2 points per game. But for some reason, in Western Pennsylvania, over the last two or three seasons, people seem dissatisfied and disinterested with Pitt basketball under Jamie Dixon. The Panthers won a game in the NCAA tournament in 2014 when they routed Colorado. They then lost to Florida, who went to the Final Four. They missed the NCAA tournament in 2015, and this year they made the Field of 68 and lost a very tough game to Wisconsin. But to me, Pitt basketball, in terms of the overall talent level that was in the program, was not the same since Pitt lost in the 2009 regional final against Villanova, because that team had players that could compete against any other program in the country. Guys like DeJuan Blair, guys like LaVance Fields, guys like Sam Young. And then after that, Pitt still had vintage Pitt players, program guys that personified what really Pitt basketball was about. But I thought that Pitt really lost an opportunity to go to a Final Four in 2011 when they had, if you remember, one of the more bizarre losses in NCAA tournament history when they lost to Butler in the round of 32 when we saw whistles far away from the basket in the game's final seconds. But Pitt, when you look at it, was a team that was rock solid that year. Ashton Gibbs, Trayvon Woodall, Gilbert Brown, Gary McGee. Solid four-year players in a year in which we did not have a dominant team in college basketball. Because if you think back to that Final Four when Pitt was a one seed, the Final Four consisted of VCU, Butler, UConn, who was a three seed who won the national championship with Kemba Walker, and Kentucky as a four seed when Brandon Knight and Deron Lamb and company got to the Final Four before losing to UConn. So you look at everything in the landscape of things. After 2011, when Pitt failed to advance past Butler, the Panthers only really threatened to go to the NCAA tournament second weekend once or twice. They never really looked like a lock to get there. And that was, for Pitt fans, something that was tough to take because Pitt basketball, when Ben Hallen went there and turned things, turned into the premier program in a lot of ways in the Big East, along with UConn and Syracuse. It was UConn, it was Syracuse, it was Louisville, it was Pitt. And we have spent a lot of time on this program talking about the effects of realignment and how it's benefited some programs. Programs like Villanova. Villanova was probably the fifth, sixth, or seventh best team in the old Big East. Now, since realignment, the Wildcats are the class of that conference. They are the gold bar. They are the gold standard. And now that is what we're seeing, Villanova becoming the anchor of the new Big East Conference. For Pitt, things have gone the opposite way. In 3 years in the Atlantic Coast Conference, okay, Pitt in league play is just two games over 500. All of a sudden, the geographic footprint that Pitt used to build its program under both Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon in the tri-state area has been shifted. Now, why has that footprint been shifted? It's really simple. Pitt used to be able to sell recruits from New York and New Jersey and even Connecticut the idea of going home to play. To play at St. John's, to play at Seton Hall, to play at Rutgers, okay, to play at Connecticut. That option is no longer there. And I firmly believe that the Pitt basketball job is not as good of a job now as it was when we saw the Panthers being mentioned among the best teams in the Big East with Syracuse, with UConn, with Louisville. So the Pitt job has changed. Is that the reason why Jamie Dixon left Pittsburgh to go to his alma mater at TCU, a program that has only been to the NCAA tournament seven times in its history? That's what we're going to find out next. Jamie Dixon, the newly minted head coach of TCU, will join the College Hoop Today podcast coming up right here with me, John Rothstein. One of the moves on the coaching carousel that really stood out was Jamie Dixon leaving Pitt after 13 years as head coach to return to his alma mater, TCU, and the aforementioned head coach joins us now. And Jamie, what point over the last 6 weeks or so did it actually set in that you were indeed the head coach of TCU and not the head coach at Pitt?
Well, you know, being in a place for 17 years, 17 great years, really enjoyed it. You know, you're going to have a lot of great thoughts, memories, but you know, this is a place you always dreamed of coaching, and you always dreamed about coaching. I think if you had success and enjoyed your 4 years in college and coaching at your alma mater. So it's a dream come true in some ways. I think as a player, yeah, I thought maybe someday I could coach at the school I played at. So there was always thoughts, and obviously this is an opportunity, and you know, somebody that very rare that a person gets to coach at a high level, and especially at their place that they played at and love so much. So it's hit at different times, but exciting all the way through.
You said you spent 17 years at Pitt, 13 as head coach, right, 4 as an assistant. Did you feel it was time to move along to another challenge, or was this just a unique situation considering you were given the chance to be the head coach of your alma mater?
I think just a unique situation. I think obviously we had a very good team. We had the 10-state tournament. We had the five by the top seven returning, seven of the top nine. So, you know, really a good group and excited about that group. And I just think the opportunity was a once-in-a-lifetime a chance to coach at your alma mater, to take it to new heights, and with the facilities, the investment in the program. It's just completely a different time, a different program, a different institution. And so TCU is on the run, on the rise, I should say, and the school is doing great. And football's been top 10 in the country, so many sports, baseball top 10 in the country. So many sports are doing great, and it just leads to everybody just continuing to build up and have great success.
You know, if there's one word I would use to describe your tenure at Pitt, it's consistency. Your teams were always so consistent on both sides of the floor, but the one change that we really saw over the last couple of years that you were at Pittsburgh was you were coaching in the ACC versus the Big East. How much did that change the job at Pitt?
It changed it to a certain degree. I mean, obviously, if you change conferences, you change where you're playing, the region, it changes things. But the institution remains the same, and that's the most important thing. But those are the things that really stood out. But, it's a different conference. There's no question. A lot of the teams, though, were former Big East teams. So I would always say it was more of a merger than an addition. But seven of the 15 were former Big East teams. So again, it was change, but a lot of familiarity at the same time. And as all these conferences had changed, I mean, you know, change is part of college athletics, and it's how things fall, and certain conferences, certain schools end up in completely different situations. Pretty much everybody does end up in a different situation, and you just adapt. And any conference I've been in, it seems over my career, there's been change, there's been realignment, whether it be the Big West, the Mountain West, the WAC, the Big East, or the ACC. Constant change, and I think we'll continue to see it.
Nolan Richardson said when he was at Arkansas, you know, you build the beast and the beast turns on you. You were a play away from going to a Final Four in 2009. In 13 years at Pitt, your team's averaged 25.2 wins a season. But why do you think maybe people in Western Pennsylvania maybe took the team for granted a little bit the last couple of years?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, that it's when you get upset when somebody's down that you lose, or you're upset after you lose and say, hey, we're upset. We're disappointed. We wanted to do better. We wanted to go win the national championship. That was our goal. So, how do you fault somebody for, saying, a disappointing finish or whatever it may be? There are no there's only one team that has a great finish, and they got to get ready for the next year and win the next one. So I think it's just common. I think as coaches, we're striving to do more. We're never satisfied. So when somebody else says, we got to do more, I don't see how you can fault that. It's part of it. You want that. You want to build that. It's you want to have that expectation. I mean, you want to build that expectation. It was great. I mean, if we wanted to do low expectations, we would have kept the program where it was 17 years ago at the bottom of the Big East and just tried to maintain and win every couple of years, and then everybody be happy the one time you get to the NCAAs. But it's about building. It's about always trying to do more, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to do more, especially from other people, fans as well. That's what you want to have.
TCU head coach Jamie Dixon joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, Jamie, you've been through a lot as a head coach, but one thing you never had to do was talk to a group of players that you coached and recruited and tell them that you're leaving for another job. What was that like?
It was tough. I mean, it happened so quick. And it's interesting. I've always had to kind of deal with that in as far as people saying or rumors out there in the past. And so, in a lot of ways, I've dealt with it indirectly, but it was really tough. I mean, it was, again, talking to the players and sitting down with them. And then we had a lot of players, former players that were around that work in our program. And I think that was a tough part too. That kind of hit me. Some guys that work in administration, former players or coaches. It's going to be tough. And, pretty much every coach that goes through it more than once. And for me, it was obviously 17 years. There's not many coaches that have been in place 17 years. So there was a lot of relationships, a lot of people that had done so much for me. And I couldn't thank them enough.
Well, and during your time as a head coach, like I said, you went to 11 NCAA tournaments in 13 years. TCU has been to 7 NCAA tournaments in program history. Aside from the fact that this is your alma mater, what made you believe that you could eventually turn this thing in the right direction in a conference that had 7 of its 10 teams in the NCAA tournament?
Well, I think that's part of it, having 7 teams. I mean, you know, you're going to be playing against good people. You're going to have opportunity. 70% of your teams made it. Again, it's a new conference as far as TCU being involved in it. I think the commitment, the resources, you haven't seen the campus here now, John, but you look at the facility. Some have called it the nicest facility in the Big 12. I haven't seen all the other facilities, so I can't speak to that. But the weight room, the offices, I mean, everything is state-of-the-art, and they're still finishing up some of the things. The offices will be finishing in another month. The training table, I mean, the training room, everything is state-of-the-art. I'm looking over at the football field here right now, brand-new football field, couple $100 million worth in the football field, $100 million in the basketball facility. I mean, the commitment, and they fought to get into the Big 12. They had to battle. They had to get there, and they had to do things to show their commitment, and it's shown. So this is, I keep calling it the new TCU, and I think when people look at it and see it, they are amazed and realize the commitment, the belief, and they understand where they're at and who they got to go against and who the competition is. And our administration is terrific. I think that's an important thing to realize. I'm very good friends with them, long-time relationship with Chancellor Boschini, and then Chris Del Conte, our athletic director. I mean, the commitment they've made and what they've done just leads you to know that there's going to be something great coming forward here.
Well, and you talked about commitment, and that word was obviously used a lot with the Big East and the ACC. As you looked at things from afar, what was your perception of the Big 12?
I mean, basketball-wise, football-wise, about as, you know, as good a conference as there is when you put the two of them together. I think, which was kind of what the Southwest Conference was back in the day when I was playing a long time ago. But I think, yeah, that was the perception is the reality is that as far as basketball and football, which obviously is driving the bus, it's about as you put those two together, I think the Big 12 kind of ranks as the best conference overall. So, you know, there's a high level of commitment from all these sports and all these universities in all sports too. And they're having great success in throughout the conference. So, you know, it's a smaller of the five Power Five conferences, but really the results have shown what they've done in football and basketball have been, especially these past 2 years, have been really the best amongst the five if you really combine the two of them.
Well, and I think the interesting thing, too, is the Big 12 right now, anyway, has 10 teams, and the Big East and the ACC had 16 and 15. So the thing that changes is you're going to be coaching in a double round-robin format.
Yeah.
How does that, for you as a coach, maybe alter your approach, considering the fact that you're going to have two chances, home and away, against every opponent in the league?
It's going to be different. There's no question about it. I haven't done that in college. I mean, it's kind of a thing of the past. There's no question. The bigger conferences have put in conferences that have put unbalanced schedules. I mean, and you saw that so much in these last couple of years, how it influenced the champion really in each league. I mean, it's been amazing how much effect it's had on teams and who wins conferences. So it is, you know, the right way, the best way. I think everybody would like a balanced schedule. Everybody would like to be playing from the playing against the same people when you're trying to battle for a championship or battle for a conference. So it's the balanced way, it's the fair way, it's the right way to have it. And fortunately with the 10 teams, you know, that's what we're able to do. I mean, obviously just talking about expansion, and there always will be with the Big 12 as we go forward here. But right now, it has a great setup with the round robin and the 18 games.
TCU head coach Jamie Dixon joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And Jamie, you know, Texas is a different place in terms of recruiting, and you've added three assistants, David Patrick, Ryan Miller, and Corey Barker, all have a reputation of either getting players or being connected to players at a high level. What was your thought process when you assembled your staff?
Well, guys that have done well in recruiting, have experience, have been in this region. We're not going to be zeroing in limited solely to Texas, international, Southwest, and we'll have to go everywhere. I think we have a unique situation here. The school is unique. It's a small private school in the Power Five conference. There's not a lot of those. I think we attract kids from all over. It's a great academic institution. So I think we've got to be open-minded. We've got to be open to going different places. And I think we'll attract kids from different areas. And there's a lot of players, obviously, down here in Texas. There's no question about that. And we're going to get our share. But we're going to be getting kids from all over, and I think that's important. And I think that's what you want to have. You want to have players from different parts of the country, even the world. You've got to balance it out. You've got to find the kids that fit and not be limited to one player, one program, one region, I should say. So open-minded, resourceful assistants. You want guys that have recruited in different areas. I think that's important, and have a way of finding the guys, the diamond in the rough. I mean, that's, I think, important in this in college now, and then developing players. At the end of the day, it's about developing players. I know we always talk about the guys, but again, you watch these playoffs in the NBA and you see the best players, and you sit there and watch where some of these guys, what school they came from. It's amazing. It really is, and you go with Curry, you go with Klay Thompson, you go with Fareed, the Olympic guys. I mean, kids come from where they are ranked in high school is oftentimes, more often than not, where they end up 4 years later. So it's about developing kids and finding the right kids who want to get better.
Well, and you mentioned obviously player development, and that was one of your hallmarks at Pittsburgh throughout your tenure there. But what's unique is this is the first time you're going to inherit a program from somebody else, because when you inherited the Pittsburgh job, you were the top assistant. What are the early impressions you have of the team you're going to coach next season? I know TCU had a couple of kids, key kids, sitting out.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's about same thing. I mean, development and guys buying in and wanting to get better and putting in the work to do that and just trying to get that message across. I mean, they had some injuries last year. Obviously, not a great year. Didn't finish strong, but it's so fluid now in college basketball. I mean, you got teams, the top teams, and recruiting guys in May, June, year round now. The game has changed as far as, especially the recruiting game. I mean, it's what's going on with the filling rosters with fifth year guys, transfers, guys getting out of there 11 and 10. It's a different world now as we go about the recruiting and building rosters, because they're not going to be, rosters aren't going to be complete till school starts in the fall. And that's different. And it's a challenge for every coach now as we go forward.
Final thing for me, Jamie, I know that you obviously have had a long time close relationship with Ben Howland. He's a friend, he's a mentor, but it seemed like he became a different person when he got out of the UCLA fishbowl and he got to Mississippi State and he was just focused on building a program. How much did that and watching Ben really make that transition from afar even reiterate even more that maybe the timing was right to make a change and go to TCU?
Not much really at all. I hadn't really thought of Ben's situation. Obviously, we talk all the time and we're friends, but every situation is different. Every program is different, and I think Ben and I talk on a number of different things. But certainly, he'll be something. We'll be bouncing things off of going forward here. But at the same time, we're competing for players down in this region too, as well. So. A lot of different things, but a lot of similarities in a lot of ways, too.
All right, Jamie, we appreciate a couple minutes. Look forward to seeing you on the recruiting trail.
All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's TCU head coach Jamie Dixon. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'd like to thank TCU head coach Jamie Dixon for joining the show, and also want to remind you to check us out on iTunes and subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. But now we're going to take it to Twitter. Send me your questions at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. First question from Andre Edwards. He goes, John, do you see the Cincinnati Bearcats taking a step forward this year and getting to the Sweet 16. I think Cincinnati's biggest questions right now is this: who is going to be their third rotation big guy behind Gary Clark and Kyle Washington, two all-league players, and how good is freshman guard Jaron Cumberland? Now, talking to the Cincinnati staff, they love Cumberland. They think he's as good of a player as they've signed since they've been in the Queen City. But I think he is going to be a major key to Cincinnati's success. They need mileage out of Jaron Cumberland. The next question comes from Pico, and his next question is, where do you think Duke transfer Derek Thornton will end up? Well, Derek Thornton has already visited USC in Kansas. He also went to Washington this past week, and he's supposed to go to Miami. I thought USC was the team to beat for Derek Thornton's services earlier in this process, but when Kansas wants you, and Kansas is going to lose a point guard in Frank Mason, the Jayhawks are pretty tough to beat. Final question comes from Adam Zadroyek, and he says, John, what is the impact of Ben Carter going to Michigan State, the immediately eligible transfer from UNLV? And I think this is a huge addition for Tom Izzo and Michigan State. Michigan State's front court was depleted after Deontay Davis went to the NBA, after Matt Costello exhausted all of his eligibility, and after Marvin Clark opted to transfer. Carter gives them a banger inside, somebody who can set screens, finish at the basket, a typical Tom Izzo player. So I think it's a sensational pickup for Michigan State, a guy that will fit right in regards to the mold of the Big Ten. A couple of things I want to talk about right now as we hit you with some quick hitters and some news and notes. Julian Jacobs decided to hire an agent last week and leave USC and bypass his senior season. Julian Jacobs was not invited to the NBA Draft Combine in Chicago. That is later this week. But to me, it's a bad decision by Jacobs, and it's a brutal loss for USC. Now, why is it a brutal loss for USC? Jordan McLaughlin this past year was so much better for USC when he was off the ball. And I think of two things right now come into my head immediately when I think of the fact that Jordan McLaughlin is going to take over point guard responsibilities first full-time for USC. When USC had a 20-point lead or a 19-point lead at Washington early in Pac-12 play, Julian Jacobs went out of the game with an ankle injury. He didn't return. The Trojans blew a 19-point second-half lead. McLaughlin had 8 turnovers with the game. Then I think back to the NCAA tournament against Providence. USC had a 5-point lead with the ball with 2:21 to play, and McLaughlin tried to make a home run play instead of working the shot clock. That led to a layup for Providence. The Friars, as we know, won the game at the buzzer. So I felt that USC was a team that I was going to rank in the top 20 before next season with Julian Jacobs. I can't do that okay, with Jordan McLaughlin as the Trojans' starting point guard. I like their personnel. I like what they have coming back. I can't say they're a top 20 or 25 team without Julian Jacobs. Another thing I think you're starting to see, too, we have seen the fifth-year transfer market, okay, be game changers in certain instances over the past couple of years. DeAndre Kane went to Iowa State, if you remember, a couple of years ago. He became an all Big 12 player. I don't think the transfer pool this year is nearly as strong as it's been. And I think we're going to have a lot of kids obviously clamoring for attention, okay, through the transfer wire. But I don't know if you're going to see as many kids have an impact as we've had the past couple of years. And another thing I want to talk about, and I wrote about it last week for CBSSports.com, to me, there is no doubt that part of the reason why we have an existing epidemic when it comes to transfers in college basketball is because of the rise of Twitter over the last 5 to 7 years. There have been times, okay, in the past couple of years where we have had players, and I'm not going to name names, who have transferred 2 or 3 times, who became immediately eligible transfers, who were giving updates on social media about when they were going to make a decision. Kid, look in the mirror. You have left 2 college programs and you want to make a decision? You're not LeBron James. You're not an NBA free agent. This isn't the summer of 2010 when you want to let everybody know you're taking your talents to South Beach. But I believe, and look, I'm going to be candid about this as I always am, Twitter is a blessing and a curse. Has it helped me in my career? Absolutely. Has it helped a bunch of journalists and broadcasters in their careers? Absolutely. But now you have players who are leaving programs, often with mediocre stats, having a forum or a forum where reporters like myself, and I'll be honest about it, who are trying to cover the news, that can get their name out there. It's much different in terms of our society right now, in terms of the way it is for athletes at the college level to get attention. To get attention, okay, years ago, you used to have to do something to get your name into the paper. You used to have to be able to be in a situation where you would have to perform well to get an article written about you. Doesn't work that way anymore. You can be in a situation where you can go to the gym, you know, go about 50% through a workout, and you can tweet on my grind, and people are going to believe that you're actually on your grind. And this brings me to my next point. The power of social media when it comes to the draft combine. And look, people who have listened to this podcast and people that have read my columns know I am not an advocate of these new NBA draft rules. I understand benefiting the student athlete, but I also have to look at it from the college coaching perspective, and that inhibits spring recruiting. But I will say this. Since now you have the option to go through the draft process, okay, and to go through individual workouts and be in a situation where you can get feedback from NBA teams, which is a great thing for college athletes to do, the power of social media gives these players who don't get invited to the draft combine another forum to toot their own horn. We have had players in the last week tweet out, "I'm coming back for one more year." But those players weren't on the list of players invited to Chicago for the draft combine. So did you really have a choice, if you want to be honest with yourself? If you didn't come back to college, where were you going? You weren't invited to the draft combine, and I have said it before, and I've said it again, and I tweeted it a couple times last week on Twitter. If you are not invited, okay, to the NBA draft combine, the writing is on the wall. Go back to school immediately. But the problem is, these kids say they're going back to school and it gives them the reason to tweet and to draw more attention to themselves so they can get their share of the spotlight. I am not an advocate on those type of guys. I am not an advocate, and I'm not going to be a proponent of doing that. Work the hardest and say the least. One quick non-conference scheduling nugget for you right here. There will be a doubleheader at the Toyota Center in Houston, December the 17th. Arizona against Texas A&M. Texas against Arkansas. Multiple sources have confirmed this to CBS Sports. Texas A&M is going to return the game to Phoenix in 2018 to play Arizona. So that's a nice little doubleheader right there for the college basketball junkie. And I want to wrap up this podcast and this edition of this podcast by commemorating the life of Howard Garfinkel, the co-founder of Five Star Basketball, somebody that I had the privilege to know and be friends with over the last decade. We lost him last Saturday at 86, and we will have lots of things happen over the next 20 to 25 to 50 years in college basketball. We will never have anybody do as more for people as Howard Garfinkel, somebody who always knew that he would get more value and more joy out of giving rather than receiving. So rest in peace, Mr. G. Everybody here loves you. Next week, we will hear from ESPN's Fran Fraschilla, who will be in Chicago for the NBA Draft Combine. So we're going to get heavy into the draft next week. We will be back same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.